The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts for today, Jonathan Larson.
And I'm your second host, Jody Green.
And I'm your last host, Michael Scavarla.
The last host, the Omega host. We are excited to be coming to you again today. We're going to be doing part two of bed bugs here on the horn today. And I called it on Twitter, I called it Bed Bugs Part 2, Hemipterans Strike Back. Because the last episode was all about bed bugs and travel and sort of how you can interact with these creatures as you travel for the holidays. Today what we're going to be talking a little bit more about are bed bugs in terms of where they are in our urban areas, bed bugs, what they do in our home and how they interact with us. And then we're also going to talk about some of the control strategies that we can use for these blood-feeding pests. Right, Jody?
Yes, I mean, we could talk about bed bugs for days.
Could we?
I could.
Days straight, you think?
I mean, maybe. Your implication is that there's going to be a Bed Bugs Part 3 based on that Star Wars title.
That's true. So, there probably won't be.
And maybe then maybe some prequels.
Yeah, some prequels to bed bugs. Those will be about bat bugs.
Ooh, I could do an episode about bat bugs.
Then we could just branch off into true bugs of all kinds.
Right. Eventually get to Ligus bugs or something. Spittle bugs. Ooh, spittle bugs.
Ooh, big-eyed bugs.
Big-eyed bugs. Gelasticoridae. Isn't that one of your favorites?
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Nerds.
Now let's just end it with two.
Just two? Number two is always the best in the trilogy anyway, is what they say. So we won't even have a trilogy. We'll just stop at two. So those are the kinds of things we're going to talk about today. Are there? I mean, we're kind of just rambling at this point, but is there anything you want to share before we get started? Anything interesting going on in your respective worlds?
It's pretty dead over here. I haven't had anybody send in physical specimens for like a week and a half now. Keep checking my inbox, and there's just nothing there. So it's actually been really quiet, aside from some delusory parasitosis cases that have come in. I've seen more of those than normal. I got four or five this week.
What about you, Jonathan?
Nothing too super interesting going on. Like Mike said, it's kind of the dead of winter, so nothing too spectacular. I've had a lot of bed bug questions. I've had some roach questions, some pantry pest questions in the last week or two, those kinds of things.
I've just had a lot of snow days, and so I'm really excited to go back to work.
You just want to be around adults, is what you're saying.
Yes. And if it's going to be a snow day, it should be like good snow so you can go out and play. It's been too cold.
Oh, it's that like cold powdery snow that you can't make into a snowball?
Right.
Oh, that stinks.
Ice and just bad drivers.
So, snow, delusory parasitosis, bed bugs, not a whole lot of interesting
Mike had
things.
A baby.
Mike had a baby. I didn't know if we were going to, I didn't know if he wanted to talk about
well,
it.
Well, because
not.
We mentioned okay. it, well, but why we were missing him
right,
at ESA.
Right.
So if we don't continue that and say that the baby was born.
Right.
And Abigail was born. Right, I delivered her at home because it was a really fast labor and we never made it to the hospital. She actually beat the ambulance too by about 5 minutes. So that was an experience. If it was my first baby, I would have been concerned, but I've seen the doctors do it twice now, so.
So you're practically an expert.
Well,
I mean, she had the cord wrapped around her neck, and I dealt with that, so, and all the nurses were impressed.
I'm impressed.
I feel like, barring severe complications, I could be a midwife.
Oh, well, congratulations to you and Sarah
Thanks.
And your family.
Yes, congratulations. I would like to say that when I said, has anything exciting happened in your life recently or anything like that? I was kind of teeing you up for that. And you didn't take the bait, so.
And then there's Jody just flat out ask you.
No, it's cool. I'm happy to share. I just wasn't sure if we normally put that kind of personal stuff out. But there it is. I had a baby. Well, my wife had a baby. I didn't.
You delivered the baby soon.
Yeah, you delivered the baby. That's pretty
amazing.
I
just don't share her social security number or anything. I don't think we're okay.
Cool. I've offered to deliver babies every now and then. I've never delivered a baby.
I can't say that surprises me that you've offered.
Because I want to save a life, and I want to deliver a baby one day.
Do you ever want to share your bucket list with our listeners?
I don't think I have those written down.
No? Just in your head? Save a life, deliver a baby? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bed bugs.
Right.
Bring this back on track.
Insects and bed bugs.
Mike, do you see people bringing in things they think are bed bugs? And what are those most commonly misidentified?
Sure. I definitely see that. There's been a couple really weird ones. I'm not sure what's going on. So there's one in particular, the seed corn beetle, Stenolophus acropezus, I think. It's a carabid. They feed on seeds. There was the one summer, I had four or five people send them in, say they found them on their bed, and are these bed bugs? And the best thing I can come up with is that they're attracted to lights at night. The bedroom light is usually the last light you turn off in the house. So if it came to a porch light, got inside, then, you know, flew to the light in the room, and then you found it on the bed. So that was, it was weird because I got two or three of them within 1 week. And then I've also had a couple people send in Aeolus click beetles. The little orange and black click beetles that are found in like tall grass. I had two or three of those last summer. People, similar thing, found them on the bed, asked if they were bed bugs, and I think it's a similar thing. They come to lights at night and probably come to the bedroom light as the last thing in the house that's turned on. But those are really it. As far as like other like carpet beetles and ticks or, you know, people being bit by fleas, I don't really see a lot of that in people thinking that they're bed bugs. It's usually small beetles that are just incidentally in the house.
Yeah, I agree. I see that, too. We've not had the seed corn beetle, but we get... Do you get that?
I've had seed corn beetle brought in.
I haven't seen that.
Do you have a better idea of why people find it inside?
I would go with the exact same thing that you said, is that there's some light source, or you open the window at night when it's hot out, and they fly in easily because you don't have a screen in, maybe, or something, and they end up there.
Well, and if anyone watches TV... Yep. Or I know, well, I don't watch TV, but I do tend to work on my computer or have a screen. I know that's bad at night. And I'll get like bugs coming to my computer screen. So, I mean, they're attracted to any type of light. So if you're doing that in bed.
Oh, right? I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's a good call.
I get a lot of carpet beetles that people find in beds, and they say that this is in the bed, therefore it's a bug. It's probably a bed bug. Carpet beetles is probably my number one misidentified bed bug suspect. After that, I've had a few ticks that people have found, and I assume came off their dog or maybe even them, that were sort of hanging out in their bed. I've had some roaches brought in from beds, often with lots of food items as well, like coupled with crumbs and cracker bits and things like that. I've even had millipedes, like people bring millipedes in and they say they found them in their bedroom, and so they want to know if they're bed bugs. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about if you're worried that you're dealing with bed bugs and you're finding some specimens and you don't necessarily have time to take it to the extension office, or you don't want to pay for an inspection up front, what can you look at on this object, this insect that you've discovered, and what are some things that would differentiate bed bugs from some of these other critters that we've been talking about?
Bed bugs are round and flattened dorsoventrally, so... if you think about a flea, how they're flattened side to side, bed bugs are flattened kind of up and down. They look like a red pancake. As they feed, they'll get distended and elongate as they fill with blood. They're often a brownish, reddish in color. If they've taken a blood meal, that can often show up in the abdomen as a darker black or a dark red color. Under a microscope or a hand lens, you can see that they're reasonably hairy.
Reasonably.
Reasonably. I don't know, do you have any other ways to describe a bed bug versus something else?
I just make sure, like, does it have wings, and did you see it flying? And then you're like, no, not a bed bug.
Yeah,
and
bed bugs don't have wings. That's right. A good call. They're about a quarter inch long, too, so they're small, but they're not so small that you can't see them.
Right, and I think that really surprises people when you're like, you know, this is a bed bug, or we show them samples of bed bugs, and they're like, wow, they're a lot bigger than I thought. But they're a lot bigger than people think, but then they can also be a lot smaller than what people think. People forget that there are immature forms of insects and pests.
Yeah.
So they can be pretty small.
They're big enough that even from a pretty good distance, they really pop if you have light-colored bed sheets.
I mean, we always talk about integrated pest management. So if you feel like you have a bed bug and you first want to identify it, so, you know, Mike just talked about some really good identifying characters. So before doing any sort of treatment, but I think the most important thing that I wish people would contact us before they do anything kind of crazy, like throw out every single bit of furniture that they own. So most people tend to panic and they toss out everything. That leads to a huge problem because it's going to cost them money and they're going to buy things, bring it back into an infested place, and it's not going to solve the problem.
So instead of panicking like Jody was just describing and throwing everything in your worldly possession away or burning it in the backyard, such as we've had a few people tell us about over the phone, there are some good strategies that we could employ. There are some sensible things that you could do. So Jody, where would you start if you were in somebody's shoes where they had just discovered that they're dealing with bed bugs?
Okay, so if I brought my sample into the extension office and they told me it's a bed bug, I would think about where I've been and try to figure out where I might have picked up this bed bug. Could it have just been one? Is it just an introduction? Or do I have an infestation? And the difference between infestation is breeding, population, living, and feeding on you or your family. An introduction, maybe just one that came in off an infestation on your shoe or luggage or library book or something. So I would go home and I would try to figure out the places people sleep. So bedbugs are going to be close to their host. So I'd go to my bed and I would start taking the sheets off and I'd be looking for the dark marks, the fecal spots. I'd be looking for live bugs and I'd also be looking for exoskeletons or anything like that. But I would be looking 8 to 15 feet around the bed. And then I would probably check my daughter's room because she is also warm-blooded and has blood and sleeps in the house. I would not check my spare room because no one sleeps there. And those are the things I would look for. If I didn't see anything, I would vacuum, probably wash my sheets and just inspect the mattress, the seams, the tufts, anything close to the bed. If I did find something, then I would call a professional to come in. But I would also launder and dry, especially all my things that can be put in the dryer on high heat for about 30 minutes. And I would just continue vacuuming. Anything I can't vacuum, I would use a sticky lint roller on. I do have like these interceptors that are essentially pitfall traps on the legs of my bed. So, you know, that's something that for me, I would check those.
Just to spin off one of the things that you were talking about, this idea that I feel like we get a lot of people that come in and they're very hopeful that this is just that they have found the one and only bed bug in their home. In your experience, how often have you dealt with introductions versus infestations?
If it's in the home, a lot of times it turns out to be an infestation. A lot of times introductions will be in community organizations or
a school, offices, a library,
somewhere where there are not like regularly sleeping people. It does happen that there can just be one. Unfortunately, one like fertilized female can start her you know, her own population and create an infestation. And so, you know, I've had bedbugs come in and I put it in a container and 3 days later it's got like 3 eggs, 5 eggs, you know, continue. And then I will call that resident or homeowner and say, hey, look, this was a female bedbug. Just keep your eyes open, keep vacuuming, launder everything, because you don't know if she laid eggs. And, you know, within 10 days, those would hatch.
So. Well, and you mentioned looking up to 15 feet around the bed, that would be checking all the like little tight spaces. So the bed, obviously, but like pulling back a headboard if you've got like the bed from the wall to look behind a headboard if you've got one, looking behind pictures on the wall, taking those down, pulling the drawers out of a side table or a dresser to see if, because I've heard that they like to get in the runners of those kind of places because they're nice and tight. If you've got stacks of books on the floor, if you're and have no bookshelf space left. So they just stack up on the floor, start flipping through those and looking.
Right.
Any of those kind of tight spaces in and around the bedroom.
What you talked about with books, I mean, we have a lot of issues with libraries because, you know, these books are all over the place in the community and different people's homes. You can renew books now for, you know, months and months. And so they sit on your bedside table. When you return them, if there's an infestation, even, you know, cockroaches or any other type of pest, they could be dropped in the Dropbox, be distributed in that box in the library. Libraries are pretty good now at inspecting each book. And if there's a problem, they do have protocol on how to treat that. What is the strangest place you've found bed bugs or have heard where your clients have brought them from?
I guess one of the first weird places that people have talked to me about is finding them in and around the shower. They get concerned that they're crawling up out of the sewer. People think that they're coming out of their toilet or that they live in the bathroom. And we have to talk them through this idea that it could have fallen off of you or a family member while showering. It was still feeding on you and you woke up and you interrupted it. So it's not that they live in the sewers and crawl up and feed on you from down in the depths of the city, but it's just sort of an accident. It's a quirk that occurred.
Picture frames and clocks on the wall, smoke detectors and things like that.
Yeah. Electrical outlet covers get flipped over and you find a lot. Now, I have horror stories that I've been told by professionals and things of finding them in very bizarre spaces or in bizarre amounts. I think that the one that stuck with me the most was a friend of mine when I was back in Kentucky. He did a bit of pest control for about 6 months in between jobs, and they went into a gentleman's home, and the bed bugs were so thick that his walls were mostly bed bugs or were feces. And when they moved his couch, there was like a clear line from where the couch met the wall where they couldn't get behind it anymore, and it stopped the bed bugs. So like that's how many there were and how much they had defecated on the wall. That's wow. An extreme case, obviously, but that's something that you can find in weird situations where somebody doesn't know they're being bitten because they're not allergic or they don't care. They just either they don't mind it or they can't afford it, and you could end up with something kind of out there like that.
You know, we usually focus on the bed in the bedroom, but they'll be anywhere that you spend a lot of time being reasonably sedentary. So if you spend a lot of time on the couch, if you sleep there, if you watch a lot of TV and don't move a whole lot, you know, you can get an infestation in the couch as well or in the living room around that area. So if those are other places that you need to look, if you find a lot of them in the bedroom, you need to start thinking about where else do I spend time sitting or sleeping in the house and check those areas as well, especially if it's a large infestation where, you know, maybe the bed bugs have started spilling out of the bedroom because there's just so many of them that you weren't aware of. They're using up all the harborages in that place and they're moving to other areas of the house.
Yeah, I often find that people who have like recliners who sleep there often because it's not as comfortable on their bed and they'll spend most of their time sleeping on the recliner, that's where they're going to be. And, you know, Dr. Deanie Miller always says when she goes into like public housing, she'll always find the chair that's, you know, right in front of the TV. And that will be a place where she'll put, you know, a interceptor or pitfall trap. Quite often they're going to be there. And I think people think if they're getting bit in their bed, that they can just move to another room or they can move to a couch or sleep on the floor and then the bed bugs won't get them anymore, which, you know, is not going to work because they are just going to walk over to where you are and start like living close to wherever you're sleeping.
Might take them a night or two, but they'll find you.
Yeah, they will.
When I talk to people that are dealing with bed bugs, there's always this panic, right? This tizzy, this just absolute terror that's coursing through their veins. And when you start talking to them about inspecting, they're like, oh, I want to inspect everything. I want to look at everything in the home. And I try to advise against that because I think that there are priority areas that you need to look at first. Like I think you need to work out in concentric rings from the bed or from the sleeping area, and that should be priority one. Then you can think about things in the immediate 15 feet of the bed, pull apart drawers and things like that. Because when you start telling people, oh, tear apart everything you own and look in every nook and cranny, just right off the bat, they don't know where to start. They could look in the wrong spot. They could disturb the whole scene, and they could really make it, I don't want to say worse than it is actually going, than it actually is, but starting where you sleep is the spot to start. Start as close to you as possible and then work your way out. If you keep finding more, keep working your way out. Keep taking more things apart. And if you can't get a professional to come in, yes, you should go through everything very thoroughly so that you don't restart the problem when you stop treating or stop inspecting. But there are priority spots. There are spots you should start with. You shouldn't just destroy everything you own and start looking.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I had one client that was asking if she should also throw out the chairs in her dining room. And, you know, they're kind of the like all metal, no pad chairs, like wooden seat chairs. So no padding, nothing for them to hide in. And I told her, no, those are probably fine. There's no place on them for bed bugs to hide. You don't spend a whole lot of time in that area, aside from eating dinner and meals and things. There's probably no bed bugs in that area, so those are probably safe to keep.
Right. So early detection is going to be the key to eliminating bed bugs most effectively. If it's a really small population, you can probably take care of that. A pest control company is going to be able to do that for a lot cheaper, less time commitment. If it gets out of hand and it's in, you know, multiple rooms, inviting multiple people, and you see the spots and evidence of a large population, it is going to take a lot of time and considerable more resources and probably more money. But still, it's worth working at. Had clients come in and ask, on a number of occasions, like how long do they live? What's their lifespan? How long could they go without food? Because I'm just going to leave my apartment / home for that long. And what do you say to that?
I mean, you're talking 6 to 7 months at that point. You have to abandon ship for. They're going to wait that lean period out. And if you come back at any point during that time, they're going to start feeding again and reactivate their population.
Right. So it's an issue that you want to deal with. Like, you don't want to run away from it.
There's no avoiding it. You got to take it head on.
So let's talk about some things it says kills bed bugs. So you want to do it yourself. But these are going to be things that aren't going to necessarily work for you.
There's some problems with those products. It's not necessarily that they don't kill bed bugs. I think that's the hard part of this argument, is that you can take an essential oil or any alcohol-based product, which a lot of these are, and if you pour it directly on top of the insect, yes, it will eliminate that one pest, because enough of any of those kinds of things will suffocate or desiccate or kill any insect. It's not that they don't kill bed bugs. It's that they are not maximized for efficacy in terms of long-term control. If you're using those products, you're not getting any residual protection. It's only a touch and kill. And once it's dry, usually you have no barrier at that point. So you're not going to get any help. You're not going to solve your problem. You're usually out $10 to $15, whatever it is that you spent on it.
Well, and bed bugs like to hide, so you need to get those essential oils or alcohol-based products directly where the bed bugs are, and that can be difficult because they are all about finding a crevice or a crack or a harborage and getting in there where you can't get them. Beyond the fact that there's no residual effect, that makes it even harder to get appropriate control with those products.
Which is why bed bug bombs do not work. Right?
Bombs are not a good idea, just because that residue, the geyser of insecticide that comes out of there, it's not seeping into the area that you need it to be in order to provide any actual control.
Do either of you want to talk about synthetic pyrethroids and insecticide resistance? Because most of the products that you'll find that can be bought by homeowners are pyrethroids.
So pyrethroids are a class of insecticides that we've been using for quite some time. I'd say since at least the late 70s, probably maybe the mid 80s. They are a popular group because they offer a wide range of control. They control a lot of different kinds of insects. In comparison to older classes like an organochlorine or an organophosphate, they have a shorter residual time, so are conceivably healthier for the environment. There are some negatives with them. They're bad for fish and other aquatics. They are harmful for pollinators if you use them outdoors. But they've been popular inside because they give us a nice 1 to 3 week window of protection against certain kinds of pests as they crawl through them. It's a high contact toxicity for insects. So that's why we like using it as sort of a perimeter insecticide in a lot of house situations. Now for bed bugs, the issue arises that we could use them against them since they're labeled for indoor use and all that kind of good stuff. The problem is that pyrethroids are directly descended from DDT and from the organochlorines. They share a similar mode of action, and because of that, sometimes we see a lack of efficacy. We see a lack of control with pyrethroids against bedbugs. Because while the United States and some other nations banned DDT after the discoveries that were made by Rachel Carson and other scientists, many other nations where bedbugs have persisted for the last 50 years did not ban it. And they have continually used DDT against bedbugs and have bred resistance to DDT, which grandfathers in the pyrethroids. And since we've received a lot of these bedbugs from those nations back into the United States, the genetic lineage comes from those other locations. The populations that we have, you can find pockets of resistance where the pyrethroids no longer work against them.
So if you're going to use those products and use them a lot and homeowners are not regulated, then it's not going to work on the bedbugs. And you're going to use more, you're going to use it more often, and it's just going to contribute it to more insecticide resistance.
Right. You're not going to get any control, most likely, in some of these situations. And you are going to waste your money and you're going to put yourself at risk if you just keep putting more and more pyrethroids out. You can get contact toxicity yourself as a human being from them. So you have to be careful with them when you use them. So we've overcome some of that resistance problem with combination products where we put another insecticide in with the pyrethroid just to guarantee we control everybody. Even if there is a random mutant that's evolved that resistance, we're going to take care of it with a neonicotinoid that's put in or whatever it might be that's in that particular trade name of a product. But this is an issue that you have to be aware of because a lot of those combo products are professional use only. There are some that are on the market for homeowners, but if you get just a straight pyrethroid, you stand a chance of not seeing any control.
People like the idea of spraying because it's easy. Like you get the product, you spray it around, you take care of the problem. I often suggest some non-spray things that people can do to nip a small infestation in the bud. A couple of the things that I suggest are, if the bed bugs are feeding on you, move the whole bed away from a wall, like isolate the bed from the rest of the room. Pull it away from a wall, maybe wrap double-sided tape around the legs to catch any that are trying to crawl up the legs from other parts of the room. I've suggested if your bed is on a frame, like put the feet of the frame in like a little bowl or something to hold some diatomaceous earth and put diatomaceous earth in there so you kill any that are crawling across that barrier onto your bed, and put the box springs and the mattress in one of the bed bug mattress covers. Keep any that are in on your bed like contained. Good advice, bad advice?
What you said about pulling the bed away from the wall and things like that. Like if the bugs have not been on the bed yet, that's a good idea. I think for me, because I have the interceptors on the legs of the bed, so they're very similar to what you're saying about like bowls so that you can collect or catch the bed bugs if they're not already on the bed. Double-sided tape, it's kind of like glue board. So, I mean, it really depends. You might be able to catch some of the smaller ones, but it also, if they're already on the bed. I like the interceptors because they're sturdy and they're made for being on the bed legs. And if you don't have a bed that has legs, you can just put it underneath the bed. There's like a really shiny, like a catcher, I guess, so they can't get out. They can climb in, but they can't climb out. And that's been shown to work in a number of situations in public housing and also, you know, with homes.
What are these interceptors? I'm not sure what they are.
Yeah, so they kind of look like a saucer.
It's a fancy dog bowl.
It could be. If you look up online, like, bed bug interceptor, you'll see there's different ones. There's, like, I don't know, climb-ups and
volcano trap.
Lights out. There's different ones there. But it's a good way to catch, I guess, bed bugs that aren't already on the bed, so you may be able to take some, you know, out of the mating population and decrease bites in some way. So I think it's really like the cheapest form of control and monitoring because it uses us, you know, the sleeping person as a lure, so you don't have to have anything there besides being on the bed because we're going to attract them to us, and so they'll get caught. But if you even just buy one interceptor, you can use that as a trap. If you have a vacant apartment or you want to know, like you don't have a sleeping human there, you can get like a styrofoam cup or a coffee cup, put dry ice in it, and then put that in the middle of the interceptor. so the bed bugs would be attracted to the carbon dioxide and then climb into the interceptor and get stuck. I mean, vacuuming is a big thing that always gets overlooked in running things through the dryer. And I always say, like, check the lint catcher. Pull out your lint catcher and you see a bunch of bed bugs. That will get you on board wanting to do more cleaning.
I think if I have somebody that comes in and they're not ready to spray, they're not financially able to spray, what have you, the things that I start with are inspecting first, figuring out which room they're in, who's got them, and where you're going to begin. And then after that, it's either vacuuming or using the extra sticky lint roller to collect them off of the bed itself, laundering everything that was on the bed and near the bed if you can, and then kind of doing monitoring after that. It's not a control or an elimination situation. It's a management of the population so you get less bites on you, but it's something. Right. It's better than nothing. I think if you're not going to spray, you don't want to spray, or you can't, those are the things that I would look into.
Then you have to manually remove, seek out,
physically destroy them.
And what you said about the bed bug mattress encasements, I think they're a good idea for monitoring. Definitely. They're not going to stop future infestation. But it's going to protect your new mattress. It's going to make it so you don't have to throw out your old mattress. And to have like a seamless, pure white covering, you're going to see those bugs quicker, faster. You know, I do think it's a good idea. They are made from different fabrics. They can be expensive for some people. And it doesn't, you know, prevent ripping and tearing. And, you know,
and it should have a zipper. I feel like that's something we've emphasized many times on the show, is that it should zip closed all the way. It can't. I've had multiple people who've gotten, I don't know how to put it, like a $5
vinyl
encasement. It's basically a tarp that you wrap around the bed like a burrito. That's not good enough. It has to close. It has to be all the way shut.
Yeah.
If it's not, then they will find the way out eventually and they'll feed on you.
Right.
The idea with the encasement is anything on the inside can't get to you anymore. They starve to death in there. And on the outside, you can monitor a lot easier. So pairing that with the volcano trap or the climb-up trap is going to be a great way of making sure that the problem's not spreading or coming back.
Another thing you can do is really minimize the clutter that you have around the bed. So like Mike and all your piles of books and papers, you know, putting those in plastic totes or putting those in Ziploc bags and freezing them, or, you know, just putting them in an airtight storage where even if they have bed bugs, that they're just not going to be out feeding.
Along those lines, what do you think about encasing, say, a couch or recliner or something that you have bed bugs, but you want to try to save it? Encasing something like that for 6 to 8 months, presuming you can get an encasement that is big enough and seals completely, is that a viable way to save a piece of furniture you don't want to throw out by just encasing it and starving them out? If you can eliminate the rest of the infestation as well during that time.
I think that you can do other things to a recliner and a couch besides encase it that would actually remove the population better than the encasement. So, again, the vacuuming, the lint roller, directly removing, steaming it. If you get a steam cleaner and go through and clean that off, I think that those are better strategies based on the data that I've seen from around in different labs with those kinds of products, rather than using the encasement on a big piece of furniture like that. Because encasements, I feel like we need to stress, they're not really a control measure per se. It's a monitoring strategy and a barrier. So at best, it's putting something between you and the hungry needle-like mouths of the bed bugs that are inside, or it's putting a barrier between you and any treatment that you've put down. It's not a magic force field. It's not going to control bed bugs for you, really.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can seal it up and you can spend a year without your recliner, yes. Or, I mean, if you really want that recliner, I would probably get like a container and have that heat treated.
Yeah.
What about this time of year? So we're all in cold areas. It was 0 degrees Fahrenheit for a few days here. You know, you have a house, maybe you have a protected area outside. You can drag your couch under a garage roof or something and leave it outside. Is cold treatment something that would work if you have the space and that kind of place to do it during the winter?
Research says freezing temperatures for 96 hours. Usually here, it doesn't get that cold for that many hours.
Straight.
Straight.
Yeah. There can't be any relief from that zero or negative temperature. If there is, then they start to recover. The bed bugs are tough, and they're able to survive that freezing process. I don't know if I've ever experienced four straight days of zero to sub-zero temperatures that were sustained, like the whole time it was that cold, without the wind chill. I don't recommend that, I would say. Based on the data that has been shared with us at conferences, people here in Nebraska often bring that up is, well, I'm just going to throw my couch in the backyard for the next couple of days, and then I'll go back and get it. And it's just not going to work for you. Cold can work if you do it right. And in fact, Jody has a lot of experience with that in libraries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they, what do they do?
Yeah. So if the library gets a book or returned items and they suspect any type of bug or living insect, then protocol is to put it in a bag, Ziploc bags, and put it in the freezer for at least 4 days to kill everything. And so they kind of have like a rotation going in this deep freezer with like notes on books and when it's been in there. And then after that time, they can bring it to me to look through. But yeah, it's got to be, I mean, they have to have that book in there for at least 4 to 7 days.
So if you had a client come in and they asked about cold, I think you and I have both told people, like, okay, gather up your books. If you really don't want to go through and inspect all of them, set your freezer at 0 degrees and put them in a bag for 4 days in there, and that way you don't have to worry about it. You could control them that way. Yeah. But for a couch or a bed or what have you.
Yeah. For small items, like when people are like, what about my shoes? I'm like, do you have room in your freezer? Right. Stick them in a Ziploc bag and put them in the freezer.
Get a shelf for your dryer and dry them and make them hot, or put them in a bag and put them in the freezer and freeze them.
Right. And I think in the opposite form, a lot of times, you know, in the summer, cars get really hot and they want to put all their things in the car and put it outside in heat. And although extreme temperatures of heat are going to kill all life stages, when you're in a vehicle, I mean, there's always going to be a cold sink. And these are small insects, so, I mean, they're going to find a place to hide. It's my car. I know where it's going to, where I can put my chapstick so it doesn't melt on a hot day. And that's where the bed bugs are going to go. You know,
the chapstick zone.
In the chapstick zone. So, like, yeah, if you have a black trash bag and it's really hot, I mean, if you have it on your driveway in really high heat and you're turning it every hour for, like, day, you know, until the sun's out, maybe. I don't know. It's not something I would completely rely on to kill bed bugs.
It's very rarely a simple situation when you're dealing with bed bugs. There is no quick fix. It's going to take time and it's going to take effort. And if you don't want to do it on your own, it's going to take money. So if you were turning to a professional, what are the main options you're going to be offered, Jody?
Okay, so here we've got chemical treatment and heat treatment. And if you talk to either one, I mean, everyone's got an opinion and they think the other one doesn't work.
It's Montagues and Capulets.
Exactly. But there's also fumigation, which is the third. And so a lot of times people don't really understand the difference between a fumigation and a chemical treatment. But fumigation is gas. And so some people may think their place got fumigated when it really was exterminated or treated. So fumigation is going to be a gas, and nobody can be in this home for at least 24 hours because they have to put gas. It's sulfurofluoride. They do this a lot for Vicane.
I was going to ask if it was Vicane.
Yeah, it's Vicane. So they do it a lot for drywood termites on the West Coast. Have you ever seen a house with like a tarp over top?
It looks like a carnival.
Yeah, it looks really fun. But it's because they have different termites there. So they've got to tend the house and fumigate it. And they can also do that with bed bugs. It will kill every living thing that's in that house.
Yes.
So nothing can be in there.
And my understanding is one of the big expenses with tenting like that is you have to, in some states at least, hire a security guard to make sure no thieves are trying to come into your house and break in while the Vicane's going on, because it'll kill the thief just as much as it'll kill the bed bugs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's going to guarantee that every living thing's dead. It's going to be very expensive, and that's not something we see a lot around here, but I know there is a company in Nebraska that does fumigation for bed bugs. And this has to be a whole house. You can't do an apartment or one unit of a duplex. It's got to be a whole building. So that's typically the third option is not as common.
Is that typically more expensive than the other two options as well?
Oh, yes. Yes. So heat treatment, you need heat and you need airflow for a home because you want to circulate that air so that it's hot in all places so it reaches that lethal temperature. And then you also need to monitor all areas of the house. So some places are going to take longer to heat up, like tile floors. But you need to hold it. And it's usually going to be 120 degrees Fahrenheit to 122 degrees. That temperature has to be in all areas to kill all the bed bugs. You can do some rooms, but there's a lot. It's very questionable when it comes to multifamily housing because the heat may drive bed bugs into certain areas. Right. So... that might
for those
not
who
always
couldn't see,
be an
option. I was directing them
yes,
different places.
They might. No. And then for chemical treatment, you're going to need residual insecticide, maybe contact insecticide. So what you were talking about, and then dusts for voids, and you mentioned like outlets in places where they can hide the cracks and crevices. You can do dusts, so that does leave a longer residual. So. Those are your options. Each one is going to have like pros and cons. So time, money, and prep. So prep is probably one of the things that make bed bug treatment so difficult because, I mean, with chemical treatment, you don't want all your clothes treated with pesticide. Your pest control company is going to require you to bag up and launder all your items to make sure they're free of bed bugs and to keep them bagged because you don't want those sprayed with pesticide. And then on the other side, when it's a heat treatment, you want everything you have that can be treated to be heat treated. So you don't want to remove things that may be infested. But then, you know, it's heat. It's high temperature. You're not going to want, like, candles.
Aerosols. The Mona Lisa.
Yes. Art. You're not going to want musical instruments. All things that can be damaged
antiques.
With heat. Right. So, I mean, there's pros and cons to each. And it's not going to work for every situation. It's going to really be determined on like what your population, how big the infestation is, where it's located, what kind of housing unit you live in, how much money you have is also very important.
All three work. So if you see an advertisement yes. that says one of the other two options doesn't work,
right.
that's not completely honest, right. but it is fact. I mean, just like Jody said, there's different strokes for different folks. And there's different ways to kill the pests that are better for certain situations. So
we cannot, as Extension, recommend certain companies. You want a reputable company. You want to check to make sure they're on the Better Business Bureau. You want to trust this person. So call a couple companies and ask them some questions. What do they know? What they're going to offer you? A lot of times people will say a guarantee. No, a lot of times it's going to be difficult with bed bugs because they can always reinfest. So companies, you know, think about what they're saying they're doing and how many times they're going to be back. For heat treatment, it's going to be one treatment. Fumigation is going to be one treatment. Chemical treatment, because the eggs are not susceptible to pesticide, they're going to usually come back 2 to 3 weeks later to do a follow-up. And some companies will even come a third time. So you want to know if that's in your contract before you agree to go with them. You want to know what kind of products they're going to use. And if they're going to dust those voids. So just ask questions and interview multiple companies. There are a lot of bed bug sniffing dogs. You know what I mean? Dogs are great for that kind of stuff. But it's not always going to be perfect. Like
you can get a false positive.
Right. And it's difficult because some of them are really little. What if you have bed bugs high up? Other pets, different smells, temperature, air movement, those are all going to affect dogs. But generally, they are great for inspecting a large area in a small amount of time. Dorm rooms, the library. I do think sometimes in some situations that dogs are good. And they do put a lot of people at ease if they don't know if they have a problem. They can sniff out live bed bugs and viable eggs as well.
And if you can't afford a dog, you can always hire Jody. Because she can also smell bed bugs.
I got a headache. Talent. I got a headache.
Yeah. I mean, we could just set you into the room.
I can sit down and bark.
Yeah. No barking. Just like, okay, I feel... You could be like a bed bug psychic almost. If your head hurts, you can be, oh, yes, I sense them.
I sense them.
I like it. I have a new business venture for us.
Do you want to talk about Apprehend just real quick, too? Since that's... I wouldn't classify it as a chemical treatment, but it's applied in similar manner. So Apprehend is a... bed bug product. It was developed at Penn State. Unlike chemical controls that use a chemical to kill the bed bugs, it is a fungus. It's Bavaria. And Bavaria is a fungus that kills a lot of different insects. And these ones were specifically developed and bred to attack bedbugs. And so the conidia, the fungal spores, are suspended in an oil-type immersion and then sprayed in the area. They kind of create like a barrier that when the bedbugs cross the barrier, they pick up the spores. The spores germinate and grow into the bedbug, which kills it. And it usually takes 4 to 5 days to kill an individual bedbug. But when that bedbug finally dies, other bedbugs can pick up the spores off of its body as well. So it kind of takes the spores back to the harborage. And under ideal circumstances, you can get good control with one application because they're moving the spores back and forth between each other and infesting each other as they die.
And that's really targeted just for insects, right? It's not going to be harmful for humans or animals?
Correct. Correct. So it's a fungus that kills just insects. And this one is pretty specific to bedbugs. It is completely harmless to people and to pets, which makes it really nice. The formulation that they're using with the oil means that the spores can survive really low humidity environments as well, so similar to what you would find in a home. And from my understanding, it works really well. So it's registered. I just looked in 49 of 50 states. They're not registered in California yet.
And it is one of the only products that is registered for prevention, like preventative treatment. So you can put it before you find bedbugs. A lot of the other bedbug treatments, especially, you know, with chemicals, you're not going to want to, you know, expose anyone to pesticides if is not a confirmed bedbug infestation.
According to the label, it lasts up to 3 months after an application. So that's the, you know, we mentioned how long some of these other pyrethroids and things last, you know, up to 3 weeks. So you're getting a lot longer of a control window with Apprehend. I know I sound like I'm just plugging it a lot because it was developed at Penn State and that's where I'm at, but it's not. It seems like a really good product.
Yeah, it's definitely something different. And I know that they've come out with like a neem oil product that's, you know, botanical based insecticide for bed bugs. Loving called Sirkil. Evidently, it can be used as a spray or a fumigant, and it has residual and ovicidal properties. So that's its neem.
Neem kills bugs.
Neem. Yeah, and then there's something called Eco Raider that's also a bioinsecticide, and it's the active is cedar oil and geran oil. These are all new, but there's going to be options out there. You know, it really depends on the situation.
So some of these, they're new. There's good efficacy data. It sounds like percolating around for them, but we're going to be learning more about how to use them and make sure that they're actually giving the control. You can always stay tuned to your extension service for more information on those. The point of today's episode was all about the fact that, yes, bed bugs are bad. Bed bugs suck, literally, and they are hard to get rid of. But you have a lot of options.
I have to mention one thing that has come about since our last bed bug episode. There is now an app that you can get for free that was put out by Dr. Susan Jones of The Ohio State University. And it's got like, it's like 15 chapters all about bed bugs at your fingertips. So I got the app and it's all on my phone, and it's, you know, from identifying bed bugs to like choosing a company, tips for travelers. So I would recommend checking that out.
So definitely go check that out in your Google store, your app store, wherever it is that you get your apps, and download that from Ohio State. It's really cool looking. It's handy. Definitely recommend that as a tool for knowledge and something that you can use to help with your situation. It's the Bed Bug Field Guide if you're looking that up. So thanks for tuning in to another episode of Arthropod. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with our February episode. We hope that you'll join us then. If you're looking to support the show, you can always tweet at us and tell us how you think we're doing, or you can tell your friends about it. It's always helpful when we get reviews on any of the myriad of ways that you listen to the show, like Stitcher or Podcatchers, like Podcast Addict or what have you. Just let us know what you think of how we're doing, and we would really appreciate that. So if you want to find us on the web, we are arthro-pod.blogspot.com, and you can find all of the different hosts on Twitter as well. I'm at @JLarson_UNL.
I'm at @JodyBugsMeUNL.
And I'm at @MScavarla36.
And we hope that you will find us, chat with us, talk with us, let us know what you think, and that you'll join us here in a little bit for another exciting episode of Arthropod.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod Gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.
Hello?
Is that you?
It is. Is that you?
As far as I know.
Oh.